hard-hitting news program with a Christian viewpoint, The Divided Kingdom. Elizabeth Cuppert Cavalry and I have been dedicated to God's calling for us to stand as Christians, as patriots, from the very time of Elizabeth's first intimidation, the evening of October 17, 2001, a time when I was away at school at a meeting, and Elizabeth and her friend were meeting outdoors in their friend's van to talk about what Elizabeth had learned about the New World Order. This to avoid being overheard by telephone tapping, or rather trapping, carefully explained by Master Sergeant and former action officer for the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Al Cuppert. As the women began to talk, their friend having left a telephone message 20 minutes or so earlier that she would be late, Elizabeth and she were horrified to see a significant aerial convoy surrounding them overhead. Their friend panicked and said, "Let's drive off." Elizabeth said they needed angels. "Warrior angels," cried her friend. Elizabeth's good Western Pennsylvania Cuppert border common sense told her they would be sitting ducks if they drove off. So instead, she said, "Let's get to the house." Quickly, they left the van. As the women reached the front steps, a loud voice boomed, probably via a microphone, "Hello." The accent was foreign, perhaps Eastern European or Russian. 2 years later, to the very day, October 17, 2003, we signed our first radio broadcast contract with Tiny WKDI in Denton, Maryland. We had begun to learn about Dr. Stan Monteith and Alex Jones. All these years later, well into the front lines of the fight for the survival of constitutional and national America, I recall what Elizabeth's friend cried out they needed, warrior angels. Such an earthly warrior angel was undoubtedly Dr. Stan Monteith, who, in his final years, saw fruition and hope in his long broadcasting efforts. The result, the Tea Party. This last November 21st, I became very ill with pneumonia. Elizabeth, of course, avoided closeness to me until I seemed to be well. On December 20th, I took her to the dentist. Within a day, I relapsed. Within days, she was very ill, too. Time froze for her until early March, when she began to get her strength back. So the two of us, for that time, really didn't do a lot of internet checking. So we were stunned to find out just this week that the founder and head of Liberty Works Radio Network, John Kottmeyer, had passed on. What a great warrior for liberty he was. I would like to read to you from LWRN.net, Liberty Works Radio Network, the tribute to this courageous defender of yours and my American rights. At age 83, Kottmeyer's photo showed a man with ruddy, smooth cheeks, wise eyes, in short, a variable Santa Claus-like look. John B. Kottmeyer, Jr., rests from his labors. This was created on the 15th of December, 2017. America has lost a true hero and patriot, John Baptist Kottmeyer, Jr., 83, of Westminster, Maryland, who passed from this world on December 13, 2017. He is survived by his wife, Nancy L. Blunt Kottmeyer, two daughters, two sons, 10 grandchildren, 7 kids who will always remember his unremitting efforts on their behalf. John served in the Navy for 4 years and with the Baltimore Police for 8 years. He was a custom home builder during the 1970s, served as a patriot in federal prison camp in the early 1980s, and was the founder and fiduciary of Save a Patriot Fellowship from 1984 onward. Most patriots will remember John Kottmeyer as one of the strongest voices of the tax honesty movement, fearlessly striving to educate the public about the limited application of the federal income tax. He and his wife Nancy took to the road for 2.5 years, visiting patriots and recruiting for the Patriot Network and then for the National Patriot Association. In addition to founding Save a Patriot Fellowship, he was founder and fiduciary of Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. John Kottmeyer's passion was, and the mission of Liberty Works Radio Network is, to educate the public about the Christian heritage and the legacy of a constitutionally limited government left to Americans by the founders of our nation. He fervently desired the government, that government at all levels be held to the confines of the Constitution. He was no fair-weather patriot, but rather, as his hero, Samuel Adams, he desired to be a grand incendiary in the great cause of liberty, understanding that it takes a tireless minority, keen on setting brush fires of freedom in the minds of men, to prevail. To that end, he was identified as an enemy of the Department of Justice and the Internal Revenue Service, and they attacked him in the fellowship without cause numerous times. In 1981, using a stacked jury, they convinced him of failure to file and sentenced him to 2 years. They convicted him of failure to file and sentenced him to 2 years in federal prison. In 1993, they raided the fellowship and attempted to shut his doors and put him in prison once again.
And this was very similar, Lou, to what happened to Dr. Greg Dixon, whose Indianapolis Baptist Temple was raided by the feds. And we have learned that they were friends. So I first talked to John when our webmistress, Angel, told us that perhaps our program could go on LWRN.net. And we really do urge you to go there. You can tell your younger friends and relatives, as Lou will point out later, to click on to an Android app or an iPhone app. And when I talked to John, he was probably around 81, 82, and I found out that he had post-polio syndrome. He had very weak legs, but what a gentlemanly person he was. And when Lou said he looked like Santa Claus, he had a white beard and white hair, but really a very earnest, childlike face. You know, if I could have just seen that picture of him. When I asked him, I said, "Are you anti-Semitic?" Because we didn't want to get on another network like our first one. And he said, "No, unless they would be atheistic Jews." And, of course, we know that there are some Khazar Jews who really aren't Jews, so they're not really of the bloodline of the chosen people in the Bible. And perhaps some of them are doing a lot of things in Hollywood promoting the atheism. But we never pick on one particular group of people, even the Muslims. You'll hear a lot tonight again about the onslaught in Europe. But we know there would be individual Muslims who, some of them, Alex Jones said, came up to him and they thank him. And they say they don't want to be a part of us. But we have to know that the overall goal of Islam is to really conquer the world and get everybody to submit to it. But now let's get back to this wonderful tribute. And when Kottmeyer talked with me, I did not know that he had paid this price in federal prison. And he said to me, chuckling, he said, "You don't know who I am, do you?" Well, I didn't want to be an ignoramus, you know, going this far into Patriot Radio, but I sort of said, "Well, no." And, you know, he went on, but he never bragged. He never said that he was in prison, but what a wonderful man. Let's get back to the tribute.
So, in 1993... they, that would be in the Department of Justice and the Internal Revenue Service, raided the fellowship and attempted to shut its doors and put him in prison once again. God, the author of liberty, caused these attempts to come to naught, and John and the members of the fellowship prevailed. After the raid, Mr. Kottmeyer and numerous fellowship members set up Liberty Works Radio Network to inform Americans of their God-given heritage. Among other accomplishments, he recorded a 12-hour lecture series entitled Just the Facts on the taxing powers of the Constitution and the application of the income tax. He wrote a book entitled Piercing the Illusion and published a booklet entitled Do Courts Have Lawmaking Powers? Despising liberty and all those who exercise their First Amendment rights, the Department of Justice sued in federal court to shut down Save a Patriot Fellowship, an action which, without the benefit of any trial on the facts, culminated in a permanent injunction in 2008 against Mr. Kottmeyer and some of the First Amendment activities of the fellowship. However, due to the faithfulness and dedication of fellow patriots, the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship and the Save a Patriot Fellowship are still active. And in closing, after giving some information about his funeral. It says, above all, John Baptist caught my belief in the Lord Jesus Christ and looked to him, the author and finisher of his faith, for help in the battle for liberty. He often quoted Galatians 5:1, stand fast, therefore, in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made us free, and be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage. May you and your family do the same. Elizabeth and I urge you to tell your children, grandchildren, and other younger friends so involved in iPhone and Android phone usage to check out LWRN.net. Go there and check on an app. You can hear the Divided Kingdom, our program at 5 p.m., repeating 11 p.m. on Mondays, Eastern Time. You can hear an earlier archive program on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, and again on Saturdays at 6 p.m. You can also hear us on WWCR.com and shortwave 4.840 megahertz Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. We have so much important news tonight. You heard a vital repeat about Islamic figure Gulen's armed retreat in Salisbury, Pennsylvania, and his Gulen schools throughout the U.S. because of technical issues preventing a new broadcast last week. We thank all of you for your help and encouraging letters. We know you appreciate that we give you lots of information with no commercials. What's up first, Elizabeth?
Well, this war, as we say, between good and evil, between Satan and the Christians, and so we have Byron York, May 2nd. This is an article by the chief correspondent, political correspondent for the Washington Examiner, headlined, Democrats in the Trap of Trump Impeachment. Yes, Lou, they're going for broke. Byron York says George W. Bush was in terrible political shape in the spring of 2006. The Iraq war was going disastrously, and voters were tired of the president, whose job approval rating in a real clear politics average of polls was around 35%. Bush's disapproval rating was around 60%. The upcoming November 06 midterms were shaping up as a debacle for Republicans who seemed likely to lose control of both houses of Congress. Things were so bad that a part of the Democratic base looked toward the midterms, openly hoping to impeach Bush on the charge that he had lied to the country and gotten it into war. One leader of that movement was Representative John Conyers, who stood to become chairman of the House Judiciary Committee if Democrats won. Conyers' committee would originate articles of impeachment. The problem for Democrats was voters. Now matters how much they want. No matter how much they wanted to make changes on Capitol Hill, and no matter how much they disapproved of Bush, they didn't want to impeach the president. Democratic candidates were stuck between their anti-Bush base and a larger electorate. The impeachment talk was so worrisome to party leaders that Representative Nancy Pelosi, who stood to become Speaker of Democrats if Democrats won the House, told her conference in May 2006 that, quote, impeachment is off the table. Pelosi would repeat that at various times during the campaign, and in November, on the day after Democrats won a smashing victory and she was poised to become Speaker, she said in her first news conference, quote, Democrats are not about getting even. Democrats are about getting results. I have said before, and I say again, impeachment is off the table, end of quote. Indeed, impeachment was off the table as Bush served his last 2 years with the Democratic House and Senate, and then Democrats won everything in 2008. Now, it is again spring in a midterm year, and there is again talk of impeaching a Republican president if Democrats win the House. Pelosi is still around and hopes to become Speaker again. What's not clear is whether her 2006 impeachment strategy will work with today's Democratic Party. In a new Quinnipiac poll, 71% of Democrats say they would like to see President Trump impeached if Democrats win the House. Just 21% oppose the idea, while 8% aren't sure. By way of contrast, 38% of independents support impeachment, while 54% oppose. So where does that leave Pelosi and other Democratic leaders? Her instincts are as cautious as they were in 2006. And at this moment, Trump's job approval rating in the Real Clear Politics average, around 42%, is higher than Bush's was when Pelosi declared Bush impeachment off the table. But 71%, those Democrats who want to see Trump impeached, is a big number. It suggests that Pelosi, or whoever leads House Democrats if the party wins in November, might not be able to override the base and simply declare impeachment a non-starter. Many Democrats in D.C. don't want to move forward on impeachment and think they can avoid it, tweeted National Review's Ramesh Ponnuru recently after release of the Quinnipiac results. I suspect they're wrong. While Republicans have plenty of problems of their own, they are keenly aware of the Democrats' impeachment dilemma. And GOP strategists want to use that dilemma to make Democrats more uncomfortable and to juice up the Republican base. The argument to Republican and independent voters is easy. The economy is strong. Trump is enacting a conservative wish list. America is showing strength abroad, and all Democrats want to do is impeach the president. It's a base motivator, says a GOP strategist working to keep control of Congress. We have to remind voters that the things Democrats want to do are not mainstream. There are a lot of Americans who can't stand Trump, but they don't think he should be impeached. The president himself is already raising the specter of his own impeachment as a way to fire up GOP voters. Quote, we have to keep the House because if we listen to Maxine Waters, she's going around saying we will impeach him, Trump said April 28th at a campaign-style rally in Washington, Michigan. Of course, there's a huge wild card in any discussion of Trump, the midterms and impeachment, and that is what happens in a Russia investigation. If some new devastating evidence comes to light from special counsel Robert Mueller, the entire dynamic could change, and Trump could lose some support in the GOP and find himself in real danger of impeachment. But all those Democrats are ready to impeach Trump right now. They don't need any new revelations. Unless something big changes, they could be a bigger problem for their own leadership than for the president. And we have a few people in the MSM, the ones who have the real brains and the ones who have some integrity. We've talked about Georgie Ann Geyer before, a longtime columnist and probably more of a globalist bent to her acumen. She said she is more in the tradition of Brzezinski and Henry Kissinger than some others. She has been a foreign correspondent and commentator in international affairs for more than 40 years. But it's very interesting to see her fair-mindedness here on May the 2nd, 2018. Trump deserves due credit for his role in Korean story. At the height of the excitement last week over the real possibility of transformation on the Korean Peninsula, a colleague of mine, a man well-informed but inflamed with dislike for Donald Trump, murmured to me, almost in anguish, "It's a great thing, but if it had only been some other president." Usually in these unpleasant days, I refuse to get into these arguments unless there is something positive to learn from them. But for some reason this time, I chose to admonish him. That's ridiculous. Haven't you grown up enough to know that good things can come from bad people and bad things from good ones? He slunk off this time, unhappily so, and I was unhappily left with my feeling that we in the press need to be more deeply invested in our historical role as professionals who are fair, who are balanced, and who are not, at least publicly, emotionally involved in our reporting. But first, let's look at this current Korean drama. I have been to South Korea. I've stood twice at the DMZ, looked at the hatred in the North Korean soldiers' faces, and grown cold inside. I've learned how the North's first communist ruler, Kim Tu-sung, had been a guerrilla fighting Japanese invaders, but seemingly less known, was also originally a Protestant. My friend Josette Sheeran, president of the Asia Society, actually interviewed this Kim and found him a great storyteller. He told us stories all the time. That amazed me. From their harsh pictures, I wasn't sure North Koreans could talk, much less tell stories. I learned how the U.S. first garbled the Korean Peninsula problem after the successes of World War II. First, Secretary of State Dean Acheson forgot to include the Koreas in the strategic Asian defensive perimeter in 1950, leading the Russians to believe we would not defend the peninsula. So Kim Tu-sung, backed by the Russians, invaded the South, and in the end, 20% of the Korean population died in the war. And I learned that despite early American mistakes, like simply drawing a line across the middle of the peninsula on the 38th parallel, which made no geopolitical sense after the war, quote, ended in a draw, the U.S. backed South Korean development to such an extent that it has not only become one of the greatest economic success stories of the modern age, but it has passed like chapters in a book on how to progress from military authoritarianism backed by the chaebol industrial giants to workable democratic development. It should also be noted that modern South Korea is heavily Christian and heavily Protestant. But in all these many years since 1953, there has been no peace treaty between North and South, although they are the very same Korean people. The limited armistice agreement was not even signed by the South Korean government, but imposed by the United Nations. Leaders of the two Koreas met in 2000 and 2007, and agreements addressing nuclear weapons in the economy were made, but never carried out by the North. Now let's look at President Trump's role in this drama. One does not have to admire the president's language, nor his behavior with women, nor his rape of the environment to see that tough language against the current North Korean leader Kim Jong-un might have had a sobering effect. Barack Obama may well have presented too weak a stage for them to walk across, waving their nuclear threats against America before the world audience. Let us ourselves walk cautiously across that stage, but let us also give the president credit where it's due. The keys, as I read the situation, are to be found in these areas. One, whether North and South can truly recognize each other, thus ending the North's fiction that it comprises the entire peninsula. Two, whether the North can find some other means to organize itself outside of endless threats. Three, whether the North can truly be expected to roll back its nuclear program against the U.S. The Koreas are important to us, even outside the nuclear question. It was the Korean War that led to the Vietnam War that set the pattern for that conflagration, and that could have, had our leaders been wiser, warned us against involvement in Indochina. They are important to President Trump, for the world will better remember how he handles this complicated and important situation than it will remember what he has said about it. And they are important to those of us in journalism, too, for too many of us are reveling in a dislike, sometimes bordering on hatred of Trump. Some of us don't seem to realize that those attitudes are antithetical to the best traditions of our work. They also can be taken as aimed against the people who feel Trump represents them. Credit where credit's due, my mother always said, and she was always right. The Korean story is a good place for all of us to start being more fair, more honest, and less emotional, and like our mothers, more right. We give her plaudits for that honest assessment. And I would like all of you listeners out there to pray with Lou as he makes a prayer for our president, Donald Trump, to have wisdom in the North Korea matter and also in the matter that has come to light with Netanyahu's expose of all the striking evidence that Iran has been going full speed ahead with its secret nuclear program. Much, much evidence that cannot be ignored. We don't have time to delineate all of it, but it is without a question definitive. The bigger question is, do we want to trigger the total inflamed Middle East into World War III? Do we want to have what one commentator on InfoWars said was really revelation? I believe that it was Mike Adams of Natural News. Yes, he said it's right there in Revelation, the destruction of Damascus you see. We really would like to not go that far. We do not want to have the globalist plan that Lou will mention again with Mazzini and Freemason head in America, Albert Pike, planning this conflagration, destroying the Islamic world, destroying the Christian world, and then building the new world order from the ashes. We really do not want to see this. So we ask for wisdom. We have heard that a lot of our military men in the Pentagon do not want to aid Israel in striking Iran. So we don't know what is best, whether a limited strike will happen with Israel. After all, they have to defend their people. All of these Jews who are leaving France, who are leaving the Muslim anti-Semitism, which is getting to be very striking, all these people are going to Israel. And they have to be defended in their borders, too. We know about the heartstrings being pulled for the Palestinians, but time after time after time, as Gary Kaw delineates well in his publication, Hope for the World, the Palestinians have turned down any real effort at peace. They don't want peace. They want jihad. So let's move on now. Let's hear, first of all, we have a news alert for all of you after Lou's prayer. After Lou's prayer, Lou is also going to tell you from Gary Kaw's Hope for the World that perhaps your own personal lookout, you need to know something for this summer. Lou, let us now have the prayer with our listeners.
Let us pray together. Oh, Lord, we ask for your protection and your guidance to our president. These are times with many, many crises in the making, many, many hot spots throughout the world, and it takes really your wisdom and your knowledge to put something into practice that will bring peace, we hope, and yet at the same time not lead to some future war. Because we know all too well that trying to buy peace now may just lead trouble in the future. So we pray that you will protect the president from harm, that you will guide him, give him extraordinary wisdom to know what to do in these troublesome situations, Korea, Iran, Syria, all these various spots around the world. Protect him from unfair critics. Protect him from those who would do him physical harm. And above all, give him wisdom to know what you want him to do and to do it. And we just pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.
And we also have to note that Trump did have to cave in a little bit with that strike on Syria. Perhaps that was to placate a little bit to the deep state, because he has to bend to some degree. But there are articles coming out now from other sources, really mainstream sources, that are saying the Syrian rebels used the sarin nerve gas, not Assad's regime, the UN official. In the Washington Times, Monday, May 6th, testimony from victims strongly suggests it was the rebels, not the Syrian government, that used sarin nerve gas during a recent incident in the revolutionary, the Revolution Rack Nation, a senior UN diplomat said in 2013. Carla Del Ponte, a member of the UN Independent International Commission of Inquiry on Syria, told Swiss TV there were strong concrete suspicions, but not yet incontrovertible proof, that rebels seeking to oust Syrian strongman Bashar al-Assad had used the nerve agent. But she said her panel had not yet seen any evidence of Syrian government forces using chemical weapons, according to the BBC, but she added that more investigation was needed. Damascus has recently faced growing Western accusations that its forces use such weapons, which President Obama has described as crossing a red line. But Ms. Del Ponte's remarks may serve to shift the focus of international concern. Ms. Del Ponte, who in 1999 was appointed to head the UN War Crimes Tribunals for Yugoslavia and Rwanda, has sometimes been a controversial figure. She was removed from her Rwanda post by the UN Security Council in 2003, but she continued as the chief prosecutor for the Yugoslav Tribunal until 2008. And we might interject there. that she's controversial because she probably didn't go along with the UN plan. The article says that she told Swiss TV, our investigators have been in neighboring countries interviewing victims, doctors, and field hospitals. According to their report of last week, which I have seen, there are strong concrete suspicions but not yet incontrovertible proof of the use of sarin gas from the way the victims were treated. She gave no further details, the BBC said. So we could go on here, but we know that there were things that looked to be sort of faked. There were the white helmets. Alex Jones on InfoWars brought this out. A lot of false flag things, fake things. But it's not fake that you have to know that the New World Order has people in all areas to kind of control your life and change things. So Gary Call, we respect very much when it comes to economic issues because he was a trade representative in the state of Indiana, and he was sent over to Europe various times. And that's how he began to learn about the New World Order. And then he wrote a wonderful book, En Route to Global Occupation. So we get his newsletter, Hope for the World. Lou, do you have any contact information there if anyone would like to turn the page there and see if there's anything on the back? It's Hope for the World, and it comes four times a year, spring, winter, summer, fall. And you could write to Hope for the World, P.O. Box 899, Noblesville, and that's all one word, Indiana, 46061-0899. And again, that is Hope for the World, P.O. Box 899, Noblesville, Indiana, 46061-0899. And now we'll get his take on what you should do about your money this summer.
News alert. We have just learned that the world's new reserve currency will be ready to go soon. It could be introduced in an official capacity any time after July 1st. The IMF, International Monetary Fund, has been in meetings with other globalist organizations and leaders to determine their final strategy on how to make the crossover to this new international medium of exchange. Since World War II, the U.S. dollar has served as the world's chief reserve currency, as most international trade and financial settlements have been conducted in dollars. This has given the U.S. an enormous advantage over other countries, allowing us to print an almost limitless supply of new money while getting foreign countries to loan us funds through their purchase of U.S. Treasury bonds with U.S. dollars. This advantageous status quo will come to an abrupt end once new global currency is implemented. The global financial institutions of the European Union, China, and the Middle East plan to replace the dollar with the SDR currency sometime in the next few years, possibly even yet this year, if the conditions are right. SDR, that's special drawing rights, will use distributed ledger crypto technology in its reserve currency transactions among the world's banking institutions. The U.S. dollar would, for the time, still be used for commerce within the United States, much like the peso is used in Mexico. However, the demand for and value of the dollar will be greatly diminished once SDR is officially crowned as the, quote, world currency, unquote. The ramifications for the United States economy are huge and too numerous to detail here. After July 1st, the only thing needed to introduce the new SDR system is the perceived failure of the old dollar-based system. My concern is that the international elite in the banks, leftist media, and deep state will manipulate President Trump's genuine efforts to bring about fair trade by fomenting an all-out trade war, which would cause massive disruptions and upheaval in the world's markets. They would then pin the blame for the financial crisis on the president, using it to undermine his administration and simultaneously usher in the new system. The powers that be are ruthless and completely dedicated to advancing their new world order. I would not put anything past them. They will do whatever is necessary to achieve their goal. They will fuel a trade war and, if necessary, a U.S. civil war or a world war to create the conditions to change. However, timing is everything. If the Lord chooses to thwart their efforts and push back their plans, the powers that be would be forced to wait until the next available opportunity to make their move. All this to say, we need to remain sober and prayerful in all that we do. We must be spiritually alert and prepared for whatever comes our way. Also, be sure to use this time to get your financial house in order, if you haven't already done so. It might be smart to keep some cash and precious metals, metal coins, on hand, just in case.
Yes, that makes a lot of good common sense. You know, I had another birthday on Earth Day. I always think that's God's little joke, that Elizabeth Border originally, you know, when we first started the radio work, I was known as Elizabeth Border, but I think of that eight-year-old child that stood there under the care and tutelage of Mr. Paul Kerr, who was a returned World War II veteran, and he was my teacher, my beloved teacher, through second, third, fourth, fifth grades. We were in what would basically be a one-room school situation, and I was the Statue of Liberty, and I was my melting pot. And even though I squinted and blinked, I was nearsighted, and that was the first tip to my parents. I needed glasses. But I think as I held that handmade torch that he made me, the woodwork of that was really neat, a little bit rustic but neat. I had no idea I would be doing this work, but you see, God is calling you, too. Do you have some children? Do you have some grandchildren? Do you have some friends who have iPhones or they're always hanging on them? Don't you think that God says to you, tell them about the divided kingdom? Because they can go to Liberty Works Radio Network, LWRN.net. Click on. Lou just tried it the other day. Just click on and go down and find an app for the Android or the iPhone. And hear our program on Mondays at 5 p.m., repeating at 11 p.m., the main program. Then the next day, Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern, you can hear a program. It'll usually be from the week before, from the archives. And then you can hear another program on Saturday. But when Lou was talking to you here, you know, from Gary Kaw's work, you get your house in order, but first is your spiritual house. Just give your whole life to the Lord. When I did this, we have a mortgage. We would have never had a mortgage. We have debts. We would have never had debts. But we have the glorious satisfaction that we are doing the best we can to protect the next generation and the Christian worldview and the cultural view of Christianity that's disappearing from Europe. Our lives have meaning. You can help us. Not just send a little money if you want to us, but you can spread the word. Isn't it your duty? Don't you want to keep America for those you love? Now, when Lou was reading about these changes that could come, but of course Gary Kaw isn't God either. He doesn't know when the special drawing rights might come in, and he said there could be a trade war. We have to have a little humor. When we talk about trade war, we know that President Trump's people, they're trying to renegotiate NAFTA. And so here was a little editorial viewpoint out of the Jacksonville Daily News, and this was reprinted on May the 2nd. And they said, Chile, one of many nations with a swelling obesity rate, is trying to scare people thin. It is slapped black stop sign-shaped warning labels on high-calorie or high-fat treats like cookies, chips, salad dressings, and cereals. Caution, fat and calories ahead. Lou is sitting over there groaning. He likes to have his little sugary peanut butter things, whatever they're called. Yes, Tony the Great, Tony the Tiger, has been banned from the box front, lest children be unduly swayed to stuff themselves with frosted flakes. Also banished is Cheetos Chester Cheetah. Now, those appetite-chilling warning labels could work their way into the U.S. How? Via a revised North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA. As part of these negotiations, officials in Mexico and Canada are discussing similar warning labels. The New York Times reports, the Trump administration, egged on by the food industry, seeks to quash efforts to force American manufacturers to stick similar warning labels on sugar-filled drinks and fat-laden packaged foods. Of course, this is a little humorous because this is the super nanny state overreach. But it is food, and this isn't going to be a life-threatening issue compared to all the things that we are very concerned about that we had Lou pray with you about. But it's interesting that Mexico and Canada are really pushing this. We have Trudeau in Canada. We have the Marxism. We have the socialist viewpoint. And then we have now, to get to the very heart of this program, some very important information. I'm going to turn it back to Lou. We've got to see the march of radical Islam.
Is there any real danger to you and me from the many fanged tentacles of the New World Order as it seeks to rebut Trump's nationalism and clamp its fist of tyranny and control over every facet of human life? Yes, Europe is almost gone. Elizabeth and I, with our love and study of British literature and history, can hardly imagine the radical Islamic nightmare. Here's some of the latest. Ben Shapiro joins roast of London mayor over knife control vow by Dennis Ernst, The Washington Times, on the April 9, 2018. London Mayor Sadiq Khan's de facto knife control measures for dealing with the city's spate of attacks were the subject of ridicule by conservative pundit Ben Shapiro and thousands on Twitter over the weekend. Violence on London streets has been so bad over the past 2 months that the city surpassed New York in murders and prompted Mr. Khan to announce a series of measures on Sunday. His rhetoric sparked a wave of mockery by critics who spotlighted his similarity to gun control activism in America. Mr. Khan tweeted Sunday, quote, "No excuses. There is never a reason to carry a knife," unquote. And Mr. Khan linked anti-knife measures to that quote, supported by his office. He went on to say, "Anyone who does will be caught, and he will feel the full force of the law." The city touted a plan called Education Knife Crime Summit and linked to the 2017 Knife Crime Strategy, that's in quotes, Knife Crime Strategy, which prohibits the sale of knives to young people. And this is in quotes, "Yes, why would anyone want to carry a knife or gun for self-defense?" responded Mr. Shapiro, whose tweet included images of the May 2013 killing of British Army soldier Fusilier Lee Rigby. Mr. Rigby was attacked on London streets by Islamic radicals Michael Adebowale and Michael Adebowale. The two ran their victim down with a car and then killed him with knives and a cleaver. Mr. Shapiro's tweet was shared roughly 2,000 times and received hundreds of comments. The mayor's tweet elicited nearly 12,000 responses. Responded one man, "London mayor bans knives. Australians, hero killers hard as tip." Another asked, "What else do you want to outlaw? Bats? Hammers?" A woman identified as Trish wrote Monday, "So glad I live in Texas." Statistics on knife crime provided by the Metropolitan Police paint a grim picture. The BBC reported on April 6 there have been between 8 and 15 knife crimes with injury on average each day in London. And that was, again, one more line. "Yes, why would anyone want to carry a knife or gun for self-defense?" That was a quote from Ben Shapiro on April 9th. Another headline, it's not only Germany that covers up mass sex attacks by migrant men. Sweden's record is shameful. Dateline Stockholm, January 16, 2016, by Ivar Arpi. It took days for police to acknowledge the extent of the mass attacks on women celebrating New Year's Eve in Cologne. The Germans were lucky. In Sweden, similar attacks have been taking place for more than a year, and the authorities are still playing catch-up. Only now.
I have to interrupt to give you an update. Just this week, there was a Swedish Muslim refugee raping a 12-year-old girl. This came from InfoWars, and he said, "I didn't know it was illegal." But pick it up, Lou.
Only now is the truth emerging, both about the attacks and the cover-ups. Stefan Löfven, our prime minister, has denounced a, quote, double betrayal, unquote, of women, and has promised an investigation. But he ought to be asking this: what made the police and even journalists cover up the truth? The answer can be discovered in the reaction to the Cologne attacks. Sweden prides itself on its sexual equality and has even pioneered a feminist foreign policy. When hundreds of women were reported to have been molested and abused in Cologne at the hands of an organized mob, the reaction from Swedish politicians and pundits ought to have been one of outrage. Instead, we were told that the events in Cologne were not unusual. An article in Aftonbladet, Sweden's largest tabloid, argued that it was racist to point out that the perpetrators in Cologne had been described as North African or Arab, since German men also carried out sexual assaults during Bavaria's Oktoberfest. Another Aftonbladet article said that reporting on the Cologne attacks was bowing to right-wing extremism. Over the last week, we've been told over and over that the real issue is men, not any particular culture, that Swedish men are no better. Then, last week, Sweden's own stories began to emerge. During the STHLM music festival, large groups of young men harassed girls sexually. It began in 2014, and it also went on during last year's festival. According to internal police reports, the groups were, quote, so-called refugee youths, primarily from Afghanistan, unquote. The youngest of the victims was 12 years old. The police claimed that there were, quote, relatively few crimes and arrests considering the number of participants, unquote. Internal reports told a different story. The police were shocked enough by the harassment to try to come up with a strategy to handle the groups of molesters at the festival, a strategy that was evidently unsuccessful. The trouble was that they were trying to deal with a problem, but would not speak its name. As Peter Agren, police chief in central Stockholm, put it, quote, sometimes we do not dare to say how things really are because we believe it will play into the hands of the Sweden Democrats, unquote. As we now know, police officers in Stockholm are instructed not to reveal the ethnicity or nationality of any suspects, lest they be accused of racism. The Sweden Democrats are the anti-immigration populist force in Sweden, no longer a fringe element, but the third largest party after the election of 2014. Opinion polls suggest they are growing ever stronger. They are reviled by all the other parties who try to fight them or rejecting their every claim as baseless. As a result, immigration cannot be discussed frankly in Sweden. If you mention anything negative about refugees or immigration, you're accused of playing into the hands of the reviled far right. As a result, even legitimate concerns are silenced or labeled xenophobic. The recent migration crisis has changed this only slightly. When a country cannot hold honest debates, there are consequences. Take Roger Tekoulu, director of events at Stockholm City Council. He said he had been utterly unaware of the risk of such attacks. Quote, it was a modus operandi that we had never seen before, large groups of young men who surround girls and molest them, unquote. The German police made a similar point. They are used to handling drunks, but gangs of young men encircling and then groping women at large public gatherings, who has ever heard of such a thing? In the Arab world, it's something of a phenomenon. It has a name, the Harish Gamia. Sometimes the girls are teased and have their veils torn off by gangs of young men. Sometimes it escalates into rape. 5 years ago, this form of attack was the subject of an award-winning Egyptian film, 678. Instances of young men surrounding and attacking girls were reported throughout the Arab Spring protests in Cairo in 2011 and 2012. Laura Logan, a CNN journalist covering the fall of Hosni Mubarak, was raped in Tahrir Square. Taharush Gamir is a modern evil, and it's being imported into Europe. Our authorities ought to be made aware of it, or ought to be aware of it, but they can't be made aware when any mention of the issue is discouraged. This leaves the police unprepared and leaves the public feeling not just vulnerable, but deceived. It doesn't take a conspiracy theorist to wonder how many more instances they have been where Swedish police have taken political considerations into account before disclosing information. Before Dan Eliasson became Sweden's national police commissioner, he tweeted that he, quote-unquote, vomited when he saw Jimmy Åkesson, party leader of the Sweden Democrats, on television. To what degree were his own personal political views imprinted on the Swedish police? Were the officers who covered up the sexual harassments responding to signals from Eliasson? Did they think that making a fuss about immigrant crime was a bad career move? And did that stop them from doing their duty? Even now, Swedes are still trying to figure out what exactly has been going on. Reports are emerging of Taroush Gamir-style harassment in Malmo on New Year's Eve. According to police reports, hundreds of refugee youths from Afghanistan roamed around and, quote, surrounded intoxicated girls, women, and harassed them, unquote. Similar incidents are being reported from towns such as Kalmar and Karlstad. The Finnish authorities are handling reports of organized sexual harassment perpetrated by Iraqi immigrants. We Swedes pride ourselves on our unrivaled record of respecting women's rights. But when women's rights conflict with the goal of accommodating other cultures, it's almost always women who are pushed to the side. This week, the chattering classes in Sweden will be worrying about how this story plays into the hands of the Sweden Democrats. But events have moved beyond that. The truth may be painful, yet as we have seen, concealing the truth is worse. And the author, Ivar Arpi, is an editorial page writer for Svenska Dagbladet.
And then we have President of France, Macron, calling for, we need 200 million from North Africa. And the UN said, no, we need 500 million. We can see this whole plan is going into being, and we do not want it here. We've told you about a mosque that is now coming to Little Princess Anne on the eastern shore of Maryland in a southern county there. And we have much more to report on this. We probably won't get into it all tonight, but we have a lot to report because we fear that Europe is almost gone. And we must have people here who are alerted. If the churches won't wake up, if those people in the churches won't wake up and the pastors won't wake up, you out there can do your duty. We know that we're reaching worldwide, and we will pray for the people in beloved Britain. Where's the royal family? Have they been always involved in Satanism and secret societies to the point that they are suicidal? Don't they care about the new little prince who was born? Don't they care about the monarchy? Because if they don't wake up and do something, we know now that the new home secretary, and he controls the border in Britain, he is a Pakistani. Now, what in the world is going on? A Muslim. And he doesn't want the open borders. The lady before him stepped down. She wanted to have some border control. What is going on? Where are the people? But you see, the people in Britain don't have their guns. They lost them 2 decades ago, like Australia. Australia is becoming much more radical Islamified, too, we have learned. Well, what will it be in your generation, in your children's generation? Are you going to tell others about this program? And we do need your help to stay on the air. If you want to help us, write to Lou Caverly, Caverly, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, capital Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. You can send a little cash. You could send a few coins. You could write a check to WWCR, and that's where we're on, WWCR.com on Thursday evenings, 8 p.m. Eastern, or the shortwave, 4.840 megahertz at the same time. So you could write a check to WWCR if you would like to help us. We do thank those of you who helped us about a month ago because things were very tight. And I mentioned how it was my birthday on Earth Day, April 22nd, one day after the Queen of England, by the way. I believe she turned 92, and we would like to see that monarchy survive. We would like to see Christianity come back to England. We would like to see Christianity come back to Europe. We'll be praying for that. So that, yes, we're going to have to buckle down here, too. I got some great birthday money. I had some fun shopping and bargains. But now I have to look at our own money, and we have to make Jesus first. And our radio program comes before anything else. It has to be that way because God called me many years ago in Lou's bachelor apartment as I stood there looking at his beautiful history books. And one was Sandburg's Lincoln. And that beautiful golden light just kind of enveloped me there. And it was this feeling. I didn't hear a voice, but I knew what the words were in my heart. This is your destiny. And the other day we had a little recurrence because sometimes we see, I guess they're just hawks, but we like to call them eagles. And in Native American lore, they were supposed to be, I think, important signs to them. And this is not a New Age rant from Elizabeth Caverly, but God has symbols. He's always used beautiful cardinals in our lives in meaningful ways to punctuate things, to punctuate messages. So I had just realized how very big all of this is, this fight for liberty, for our very lives, when they get rid of humanity and bring in the robots. When they have the giant brain that everybody will be hooked to with the brain chips, we cannot let things go to that point. I realize that Lou and I are fighting for Jesus's world to continue here in America. And so when he came home, I started to tell him, I said, today I just realized how big this is. And as we sat together in our kitchen, I looked out the panes of the back door, and there were the eagles circling. I said, oh, look, there the eagles are. Yes, he does things like that to confirm you in what you're doing, to tell you, keep it up, keep it up. Don't be a prisoner of fear. Please spread the word about our program. Pray for Alex Jones. He may not be perfect, but, you know, there have been some controversies about him. We can't answer one way or another. But we did hear Roger Stone say to him, I know you, and you're not like that. And that referred to the scandal about the gay grooming accusations. So we know that he's been bringing out a lot of truth lately, especially about this radical Islamic invasion that's coming. And it's here. It's here in some of the states. It just has to grow a little more. Alex said that there are 3 billion Muslims now, and in 6 years there will be 6 billion. That's a lot of people for the globalist regime to control, isn't it, Lou?
It certainly is. And we have to remember that, and someday we'll be talking about this, Nazi Germany tried to take advantage of the Muslims. We'll talk about that in a later program. Thank you for listening. God bless you all. Good night.